everyone. Welcome to this podcast that's going to explore the Gospel of Mark. Now, we have talked about in a past episode about the four Gospels. Three of the Gospels share a similar outline. We call these Gospels the Synoptic Gospels. These are Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And as we think about the relationship between them, for a long time, scholarship seemed to suggest that Mark's Gospel was the first. Mark's is the shortest. It doesn't include the birth narrative. Matthew includes the coming of the wise men to see Jesus. Luke includes the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. Mark doesn't include any of these things. And Mark's Gospel doesn't really include these big sections of teaching, and it doesn't have some of the parables that you find in the other two. And so it's a shorter gospel, and it is really a gospel that gets right to the point. Mark's gospel is a narrative that is full of action. It focuses on what Jesus is doing, and it's constantly using language like immediately and followed him along the way. These are kind of similar themes that you find throughout the Gospel of Mark. And so it's really focused on the things that Jesus does in his action. And it begins with his ministry. Now, what's interesting about Mark's gospel is it's framed within these two proclamations. The first proclamation comes at the opening verse, the beginning of the good news or the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And then in Mark 15, we get this proclamation from the Roman centurion, and it says something like, when he saw the way that he died, he said, surely this man was the Son of God. And so you get these two proclamations of the identity of Jesus. Jesus Christ is the Son of God. What's interesting is throughout the rest of the gospel, in the middle, what we find are questions. People are trying to figure out who Jesus is. They're coming to him, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, John's disciples. All of these people are trying to figure out who Jesus is or who Jesus thinks that he is. And then right in the middle of the gospel, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in this podcast about Mark 8, where Jesus stops with the disciples and he says, who do people say that I am? In other words, he's getting the lay of the land, like what is the conversation about who I am? But then he turns the question to the disciples, and really then he also turns it to the readers and is saying, who do you say that I am? And so one way to think about Mark's gospel is it is about the identity of Jesus. Who is Jesus? And who does he think he is? And so as I talked in the last podcast, the Gospels are biased. They're trying to do something. And the question for us as we engage in Mark's Gospel is, what is Mark trying to do? What is he trying to say about who Jesus is? Now, there may be some question about who is Mark. Many scholars believe that this is a guy named John Mark. Maybe even makes an appearance in the gospel. There's this weird little story in Gethsemane where the soldiers come and this guy runs away naked. Is that John Mark? Is he saying that he was a part of kind of following Jesus? But more importantly, I think, we see that Mark's gospel really focuses on the person of Peter. There are these different things throughout the gospel that give us a sense that Peter is this probably the source of some of this material. And the one way we think about that is how the author will say something like, the disciples and Peter. Well, isn't Peter a disciple? Why point him out? There seems to be something special about Peter in this gospel. And therefore, some people would argue that what we're getting in Mark's gospel is Peter's perspective. We could almost say it's like a gospel according to Peter. But what's important for us is that the gospel begins at the baptism of Jesus. And we get right away in Mark 1 that Mark is going to try to say something to us about the identity of Jesus and tie it back into the prophet Isaiah. One way to think about this gospel is that the identity of Jesus is closely tied to the suffering servant of Isaiah. Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is the Messiah, the Christ. But he's the Christ in the context of the suffering servant passages that we find in the second part of the prophet Isaiah. And you see it right away in verse 2, where he's already quoting from Isaiah. It says, as it is written in the prophet Isaiah, see, I'm sending my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight. And it's setting the stage for John the Baptist. And then we get the baptism of Jesus in verse 9, chapter 1, verse 9. In those days, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. And just as he was coming up out of the water, he saw the heavens torn apart and the Spirit descending like a dove on him. And a voice came from heaven, you are my Son, the Beloved, with you I am well pleased. Now this voice seems to be quoting two different texts or bringing two different Old Testament texts together. Isaiah 42, which talks about the servant, the suffering servant, and Psalm 2, which is an enthronement psalm that talks about the Son. And when we put these two things together, what we're getting is the baptism can be seen as an anointing, that Jesus is being baptized as the King, as the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God. But the baptism is connected with the idea of suffering, that Jesus is going to be a king. He's going to be a Messiah, but he is going to be the suffering Messiah or the suffering king, the suffering servant that we find in Isaiah. Now, what we also find is that Mark's gospel is focused primarily on action. So Jesus never comes out in Mark's gospel and says, I am God or I am divine or anything like that. But what he does do is he performs the things and does things that God does. So Jesus is constantly doing things that God does, specifically in the Old Testament. And Mark wants to connect us back to that. So for example, in Mark 4, verse 35, it's a story that many people are familiar with. It's the calming of the storm where Jesus is in the bow of the boat and he is asleep. And they're out in the on the sea, and a storm is raging. And in some ways, it reminds us of the book of Jonah, where Jonah's doing the same thing, and he gets chucked into the water. But here, they come to Jesus and wake him up and are like, look, don't you care that we're going to die? And what happens is Jesus gets up, and he says, it says this in verse 39, he woke up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace be still. Then the wind ceased and there was a dead calm. Now, when you go back into the Old Testament, what you find is that the sea, the water, the chaotic water, we think of Noah's flood, we think of Genesis 1, is symbolic of evil and chaos and kind of the forces of disorder. And just like in Genesis 1, where God brings order from chaos by simply speaking the word, Jesus does the same thing. He controls the waves, he controls the water, calms the storm by merely speaking a word. Now, we find another story just a couple of chapters later where Jesus feeds the 5,000 and then he sends the disciples out in a boat. In verse 45 of chapter 6, it says, immediately he made his disciples get into a boat and go ahead of him. And then verse 47, when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, he was alone on land, and they're straining against the oars, a storm again, there's adverse waves. And so Jesus walks out to them. But what's really interesting is when you get into verse 48, and it says, he came towards them early in the morning, walking on the sea. He intended to pass them by. But when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost. It's a weird narrative, because why is he just going to pass them by as if he's just out kind of walking around? Well, what Mark wants you to do is connect this back to the Old Testament. There's two instances where God reveals himself by passing by someone. Moses wants to see God's face and wants to see God, so God passes by him. Elijah, the same thing. I'm about to pass by. He passes by. And so the language of what Mark is doing here is trying to get us to see Jesus is doing what God does. Now, more than that, he is walking on the water. And the significance of this, again, when we think of the water as the chaotic evil and sin and all of this, who is it that has the power to walk on the waves? In the Psalms, Job, and all these different places, God is the one who has that power. And here Jesus is out walking on the water, on the waves. And in both of these texts, what we see is an emphasis upon fear. Do not be afraid. In the first one, he says, well, why are you so afraid? In the second one, he's saying, do not be afraid. And again, Jesus is demonstrating that he is the one who brings order from chaos. God is at work in Jesus Christ doing this. Now, what comes in the middle in between these two stories? Jesus is casting out demons and he is healing. So he's coming to do the things that God did. He is bringing the kingdom of God in his healings and the casting out of demons. And these two narratives about walking on the water connect back to the identity of God in the Old Testament. And this is what Mark is trying to say about Jesus. So then we get to chapter 8. Now we have to do a couple of things here with chapter 8, because again, we find two stories. We find two stories of the healing of a blind man. The first one, chapter 8, verse 22, it says, they came to Bethsaida. Some people brought a blind man to him and begged him to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had put saliva in his eyes and laid his hands on him, he said, can you see anything? And the man looked up and said, I can see people. They look like trees walking. Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he looked intently, and his eyes were restored. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And then you get at the end of chapter 10, you get a second story of a healing of a blind man. This time it is blind Bartimaeus. And so they came to Jericho, verse 46, chapter 10. And he and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho. Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout and say, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stood still and said, call him here. And so then it goes on, and he comes, and he says, well, what do you want me to do for you? And he says, I want to see. And then Jesus says, verse 52, go, your faith has made you well. Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. Now, what's the difference between these two stories? In the first one, the healing didn't take right away. Jesus had to do it again. The second one, it talks about how immediately his sight was restored. Now, what's going on? How do we understand the difference between these two narratives? Well, it's important that we figure out what comes in between. And what comes in between are some conversations that Jesus has with his disciples. And so you get Mark 8, verse 27, where Jesus went on it says this, Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? And they answered him, John the Baptist, and others Elijah, and still others one of the prophets. He asked them, but who do you say that I am? Peter answered him, you are the Messiah. And he sternly ordered them not to tell anyone. And then verse 31, it says, Jesus began to teach them the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected and be killed. And so what does Peter do? Peter, who just said, you are the Christ, so he's right, he got the right answer, rebukes him and kind of takes him aside. And then Jesus says to him, get behind me, Satan, for you're setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. So the question is, who's blind? And Peter kind of got the right answer. So like the first blind person who was healed, he kind of could see who Jesus was, but he didn't get the full picture. And Jesus is going to have to open his eyes so that he can truly see who he is and what he has come to do. So verse 34, he goes on and he says, he called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and the sake of the gospel will save it. For what does it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? In other words, Jesus has to correct their vision. He is the Messiah. He is the King, but he is the suffering King. And he is going to ask them to take up their cross and follow him. We see the same thing, chapter 9 and chapter 10, where the disciples are arguing about who's going to be the greatest. James and John are saying, can we sit at your right and your left? And Jesus again and again says, you don't understand. You don't know what you're asking. So what's interesting is right in the middle of these two healings, you get the sense that the disciples are blind. They don't really see who Jesus is. And the question is when they do see it, when their eyes are opened, will they follow him along the way? Notice, blind Bartimaeus follows Jesus along the way. Where's he going? He's going to Jerusalem. What is he going to do? He's going to die. So Mark wants us to recognize how Jesus is a king. He is the Christ. He's the Messiah, but he's the suffering king. He's the suffering servant of Isaiah. And we get then to this idea of what it means to follow Jesus. Following Jesus is not about power. It's not about glory. It is about suffering. And for Mark, we could call this kind of a radical discipleship. Are we willing to follow Jesus along the way? Are we willing to give up our life, all of these things that we value and we think are important and so on? Are we willing to give them up to follow Jesus, to empty ourselves and follow Jesus on the road to Jerusalem? Are we willing to take up our cross and follow him? And so again, what Mark is trying to get us to see is that Jesus is the Christ, he's the Messiah, he's the king, but he is a suffering king. So again, think about the two brackets, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, but then by the end, the Roman centurion who says, and he saw the way that he died and said, surely this man is the Son of God. The question that Mark is asking all of us, those of us who read this text, who hear the text, is can we see who Jesus is? And if we can see who Jesus is, are we willing to follow him along the way? Are we willing to follow the suffering king and the suffering servant? This is the heart of Mark's gospel, and this is what he is trying to get us to see.